Greetings once again, my white brothers and sisters of the world. Welcome to another episode of In Clawson We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale. This indeed is Reverend Matt Hale speaking to you from East Peoria, Illinois. I'm very happy to be with you once again as we continue to promote the truth, as we spread the message of white racial loyalty worldwide with this program. Our address is P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611. That is the address of our world headquarters. Our website, of course, is www.creator.org. Check these out, or check the latter out, and write the former for an information packet if you so desire. This is a show that believes strongly in white racial loyalty. We believe in the golden rule of creativity, our religion, which says as follows: what is good for the white race is the highest virtue, and what is bad for the white race is the ultimate sin. In other words, we do not bow down to the mud races of this world. We do not embrace their beings. We do not consider them equals. We do not consider their interests at all. Instead, we look at everything, every issue in this world from the white man's point of view. Since, of course, we are white. If we happen to be yellow or black or Semitic, we would look after the interests of those respective creatures, those respective species. However, we are not. We are white people. We are proud to be white people. We are nature's elite in this world. We resolutely say that we have the right to do whatever we wish to do, ultimately, as a species, as a race. That we are not bound to inhibit the advance of our race, the expansion of our race. We are bound only to follow nature's laws. Nature's laws in this world which say very clearly, very decisively, that the survival of one's own kind is the highest rule, the highest duty in life. Now, there's much to get to this week on this episode of In Clawson We Trust. First, I want to talk about the federal government's decision to finally, after hundreds of thousands, probably millions of Mexicans have been smuggled into this country. Illegal aliens, they call them. Invaders, we call them. Finally, the federal government has decided to charge some bus companies with illegally, obviously, transporting these invaders into America. It's always interesting to see the federal government take action way late in the game and then claim some kind of action or some kind of positive action at all. It's like saying, well, okay, we've had several years in which we've known about this bus company, according to the article in front of me from the Associated Press. For several years, the federal government has known that this bus company was bringing these Latino invaders into America, and yet only after September 11th do they bother to do something about it. It's similar to September 11th itself. The federal government, or the Jewish occupational government is what it really is now basically slapping themselves on the back, talking about how they are doing so many wonderful things to protect the American people. Well, did they do that on September 11th? Was there any strategy in place to prevent the loss of life that occurred on that day? And why is it, of course, that the Jewish media is essentially covering for the federal government? How come the Jewish media isn't writing articles about how Mr. Ashcroft and Mr. George W. Bush failed on September 11th? Nobody seems to be writing such things. You know why? Because, of course, the Jews own the media, and the Jews are buddy-buddy with the federal government that is also largely Jewish-dominated. In fact, if you don't understand the Jewish role in this world, the Jewish role in the economy, the Jewish role in the government, the Jewish role in the media, you can't really understand why any of these things are happening. It's like the individual that comes to me, and now and then I've had people come to me and say, well, gosh, let's just leave the Jews out of it. There's good Jews out there, and after all, Jews look pretty white in some ways, so let's not talk about the Jews. Well, if you don't do that, if you don't talk about the Jews, it's like trying to talk about snow without talking about ice. It's like trying to talk about, what analogy can I come up with? Like trying to talk about a lawnmower without gasoline in it, or something to this effect. It is very intrinsic to the world around us that you understand who is pulling the strings. It happens to be the supposed self-appointed chosen ones, the Jews. Well, once again, as we've said on previous episodes of this program, previous weeks, we've talked about how the federal government, Jewish occupational government, is responsible for what happened on September 11th due to two key basic reasons. One, United States aid to Israel. It does not take a rocket scientist to realize that if we bankroll the enemy of the Arab people, numerous Arabs, millions of Arabs hate the Jews with a passion, if we bankroll the Jews, give them all kinds of weapons, give them tanks, give them helicopters, give them planes with which to attack the Palestinians specifically and the Arabs in general, you might have some Arabs that hate America because of it. You might have some individuals who will do precisely what these individuals did on September 11th and use planes as missiles to attack the aiders and abettors of the murderers of their children. That's the first point. USA to Israel. Second of all, you have a government that has allowed the invasion of America by numerous mud races, numerous mud race individuals who care not one whit about supposed American values, who care not one whit about living the American dream, but only want to take what is rightfully yours and mine and make this country a third world hellhole. So you have negligence, you have criminal activity on both counts. Criminal negligence and allowing the invasion of America by the mud races on the part of the federal government, and criminal negligence or recklessness or what have you, whatever standard practically you want to apply to the federal government, Jewish occupational government, as we also call it, once again, supporting the state of Israel, or as I like to call it, isn't real, to the tune of billions of dollars a year, and blaming the Arab people around the world. Now, this isn't something that you'll hear about on Fox News. This isn't something you'll hear about on MSNBC or any of the various cable television shows or any of the so-called mainstream newspapers. You won't hear about it because these institutions are thoroughly controlled by this chosen race of parasites, the Jews. So, once again, how nice it is that Mr. Ashcroft shows up in front of the cameras yesterday and he says, gosh, you know, we have stopped this smuggling ring of illegal aliens. Where the hell was he a long time ago? Where were the government officials when these individuals were running across the border at will, smiling at cameras, taking pictures of them, and just running into America and causing all kinds of mischief? Why do we have mud races in America at all? And this brings me to my next point. There's a lot of talk going on right now about how September 11th changed everything. You hear that from everybody, especially the individuals that want to take away your civil liberties and mine as a result of the government's negligence, the government's criminal actions. They want to say, well, let's just go ahead and change things. Let's, you know, that everything's been changed after September 11th and we need to sacrifice a little bit of liberty to have more security. Well, let's face the fact of the matter that if the individuals of that ilk can claim that September 11th changed everything, then why can't we? Yeah, September 11th changed everything. After September 11th, we can't afford to have mud races in this country anymore. After September 11th, every single raghead should be driven out of this land, and every Jew with them. In fact, maybe we can start circulating this joke that the American dream is seeing an Arab swimming away from the shore of this country with a Jew under his arm. How about that? Let's get every single mud individual out of here. Every single nigger, every wetback, every Oriental, every Jew, every Arab, let's get them out of America. Let's say from the rooftops that everything's changed since September 11th. September 11th changed everything, and we can no longer afford for our safety, for our lives, for our livelihood, America to be polluted by these races. Oh, I know what the response would be. What would the response be from the race-mixing crowd? They would promptly say, like parrots, that, well, this country was founded on diversity. No. That's the answer to that. No, was not founded on diversity. America's founding had nothing to do with diversity. America's founding had to do with people, white people, coming to this country, driving the Indians out of the country, killing most of them, enslaving the blacks, and fighting a race war with the Mexicans in the 1830s and 40s, and having a country that was formed and founded for white people. America wasn't founded on diversity. That is horse crap, to put it bluntly. That is nonsense. That's like saying that, well, okay, the world's flat, and we all know it. Obviously, it's not. And so we can't allow these individuals to get away with that nonsense. We can't allow them to say, oh, gosh, you know, this is a multicultural country. It always was. It wasn't. It may be today, through the criminal policies of the Jewish occupational government, this illegitimate government that does not represent white people, the founding race that formed this government, or formed this country. Not at all. Not at all. So, let us indeed say, along with the rest of the, I guess you could say, people of opinion, or people with opinions in this land, that September 11th changed everything. Yes, it did. Yes, we saw for the first time, in a sense, basically the U.S. policy concerning Israel cost us thousands of lives. We saw America being used as a human shield to protect Israel. And I didn't like it. And I'm sure you didn't like it either. There's all this talk, of course, in the media, now and then. I shouldn't say all this talk, but now and then there's been some articles in the media that say that, oh gosh, we're taking advantage of September 11th. Well, isn't George Bush? Isn't John Ashcroft? Isn't the individuals who want to take away our rights, our freedoms, our supposed rights, our supposed freedoms? Aren't they taking advantage of it? And isn't the news media taking advantage of September 11th? You can't turn on the television without seeing more coverage on this matter. They love it. The longer this war goes on, the better it is for them. The more happy they'll be, the more money they will rake in. Certainly, various charities have taken advantage of September 11th. And the Jews have taken advantage of September 11th big time. Gosh, they're using September 11th as their guide in dealing with the Palestinians. They say they have a right to root out terrorism like America, etc. Well, there's another example of Jewish arrogance in that we lose thousands of people, and the Jews lose 20 or so in a bombing, and they claim that they have a similar situation. It's just the same thing, as Sharon said, Mr. Butcher of Beirut. They're the same situations, and they have the right to act, too. Of course, the difference is that the Israelis are occupying Palestinian land. They are occupiers, and the Palestinians are essentially freedom fighters trying to drive the Israeli occupiers from their land. A very different situation than us simply being here and all of a sudden finding two skyscrapers going down due to jumbo jets flying into them. So, yes, we have to expose this hypocrisy, this nonsense. We need we need the mud races out of this land. They are dangerous. September 11th proved that. September 11th proved that a so-called diverse society is a calamity, is a recipe waiting to explode. This is a situation in which it's been made clear, absolutely clear, throughout the decades, and especially after September 11th, that having diversity is harmful to one's health. Diversity causes massive crime. Certainly, the criminal statistics, the FBI statistics, prove that blacks commit a vastly disproportionate amount of violent crimes. The Hispanics, the Latinos, as I also like to call them, as you well know, they commit a massive amount of crimes. You have now these Arabs, they're a security threat, certainly far more than the Japanese were during World War II, and the Japanese were rounded up as a security threat. It's obvious that if you have a society, if you have a land in which basically anyone's welcome to come, regardless of what they believe in, and regardless of their origin, their nationality, their ethnicity, their race, you will have a mess. You can't hold together a society without some common racial background. You can't have a potpourri of races and expect all the races to get along. It is ludicrous. So, yes, we need to end the situation. We have to end this problem, and the only way to do so is through racial separation. The cleansing of America must occur. Yes, ethnic cleansing, legal and peaceful ethnic cleansing, certainly from our part, but we have to get these mud races out of here. Now, next thing I want to talk about on this week's radio show, In Clawson We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale, is our upcoming meeting in Pennsylvania on January 12th. I'm sure I'll talk about this for a little bit. There's a number of things to cover, but in any case, it is making a lot of news. We are going to be meeting at the York, in the city of York, Pennsylvania, at the Martin Library at noon on January 12th, just 1 month from tomorrow. Or 1 month from today, actually. We urge each and every one of you to attend this meeting. This meeting is going to be a great success. It is going to be a great event. We have white racial loyalist comrades coming from states around. We have to show that unity. A lot of people talk about unity, but they're really not doing anything about it. People talk about how we need to unite, regardless of organization. Well, the World Church of the Creator has always been ready and willing to do that. For example, we have members that are members of other organizations, and that's their right. That's their business. That's fine. It's not my preference. Certainly, I wish to devote myself entirely to the church. But at the same time, since we are a church, since we are a religion, political groups can adopt our religion, and that's fine. And various organizations do. And we are having this meeting on January 12th once again to have unity, and to speak the truth, to talk about the fact that the niggers and the Jews have destroyed this country. That, in fact, is the subject of the meeting. The official subject, or the official title of my speech, will be How the Blacks and Jews Have Destroyed America. Certainly, it's getting a lot of attention for that reason. It's getting a lot of attention because of where, or what York is. York, Pennsylvania, is a city with much controversy. The mayor of the city has recently been charged in a 32-year-old supposed civil rights violation. In 1969, he supposedly aided and abetted some murder of some nigger so-called civil rights worker or something to that effect. And so there's been a lot of controversy. Here's a guy that's a popular mayor, and he was targeted by the attorneys. I'm not even sure of all the details as far as who charged him and what the exact charge is, but in any case, that's the situation, and we have a lot of potential support in this area. It's my understanding that there's a sizable nigger population in York, and of course, where there are many niggers, many people hate niggers. That's always been a simple fact of the matter. That's why we have more support in, say, Illinois and Florida and New York and California than we do in Idaho. Or North Dakota, or South Dakota, states that have very few non-whites, especially of the African-American variety. But in any case, it's going to be a great event. I urge you to attend. Show your own dedication. You can't just show education always by just listening to what other people say, or simply by saying, well, you believe. Well, believe and attend. We need a great turnout. The world's attention will be focused on us that day in York. I guarantee that our meeting is going to make a lot of news. It's already made the newspapers all over the place out there. I don't know how they even found out about the meeting. I hadn't even announced it, but the media is calling me all of a sudden last week. I have a few articles in front of me, and I will go ahead and discuss them. We have an article here, Confrontation Brews for Racist Library Meeting. That was issued yesterday, December 11th. In which they talk about how the Jewish Defense League, an anti-racist action plan on attending our meeting, or at least being there. Now, this is not cause for not coming. I hope there are nobody, or there's no one out there who might think, oh gosh, they're going to show up, so I'm not going to be there. No, that's all the more reason to be there. We need to have a solid front against these scoundrels who obviously are interested in mongrelizing America and making the white race an extinct species and destroying our culture, destroying our bloodlines. Obviously, we have to thwart that type of effort. In any case, they have a lot of quotes in here. This is one that I found amusing. They have this individual called Kathy Ash. She is the executive director of York City's Human Relations Commission. Anyway, this person wrote me an email a few days ago and pleading with me not to come to York and appealing to my good judgment and my consideration and how York has suffered enough with the mayoral controversy. And I guess there was a meeting of the Klan there at one point that caused such trauma to the residents, etc. Well, I promptly answered, well, no. The answer is no. I'm not going to not come to a city and preach what I know to be the truth and stand up for my people simply because the true villains of this society, the anti-racists, don't want me to do so. And I told her that people like her are responsible for the destruction of this nation, and they are. She's a white woman. She's a white turncoat. She basically is an aider and abettor of the enemies of her people, and she's therefore a traitor. She is a classic example of a race traitor. In any case, she has a quote here saying, the Ku Klux Klan is like kindergarten to these guys, unquote, she said. Well, I don't know if that's the case. I know that we believe very strongly in our point of view. I know that we're the most active organization in America, if not the world. I know that members of the World Church of the Creator and their supporters, or its supporters, are incredibly enthusiastic. But, of course, she describes our church, though, as being possibly the most violent and dangerous of the white supremacist organizations. That's what the article says. Are we violent? Of course not. Everybody knows, anybody with any modicum of intelligence knows that we're not violent. However, we will defend ourselves, as we always have defended ourselves. We don't happen to believe and turn the other cheek, resist not evil, pray for your persecutors, and judge not. We do not believe in those concepts, because they are anti-nature, and they are destructive to those who choose to embrace them. In other words, if somebody slaps you on one cheek, it doesn't make biological or genetic sense to turn your other cheek to them and have round two. Obviously, that type of ethic is demeaning and destructive to those who partake in it. Anyway, the individuals who oppose our cause in the city of York have sought to stop us from meeting, or at least have hoped that we wouldn't meet. And, in fact, I saw an article last week in which the school board president, of all people, was saying that he was going to contact the director of Homeland Security and inform them that a terrorist group was going to meet in York and that we should be stopped from so meeting. Can you imagine, I mean, how stupid can a person be? This school board director in York for saying that. And certainly it is borderline libel to say such a thing, calling us terrorists and saying we're violent, etc. Especially in the midst of what happened on September 11th. It's like, you know, calling the police saying, well, my neighbor, I just saw a towel on his head and I saw a machine gun in his hand, go get him. That's not the type of thing you should do. It's obviously inciting. It's obviously infringing, trying to infringe upon someone's First Amendment rights. But in any case, since then, it has become clear to our opponents, the political opponents in York, the various human relations groups and school boards and etc., that they cannot stop us from meeting in York. There was this talk, like I say, about trying to do so, contacting the governor's office. That was another thing I read. The school board president said that, that he would contact the governor's office, etc., and try to do this. Well, they found out since then that it won't be happening. In any case, let me read this brief article to you. I have another article in front of me entitled "Library Supports Free Speech" that was issued on December 7th. I'll read an excerpt here. I'll read the whole thing. As soon as he left the county's gang seminar on Thursday afternoon, Leo Cooper drove straight to the Martin Library in York to find out how the public library can justify allowing a racist meeting to be held there in January. The head of York's NAACP chapter found out what many others found out Thursday. The library staff believes in free speech and the First Amendment, and isn't doing anything wrong by allowing the Reverend Matt Hale, leader of the World Church of the Creator, to speak there during a meeting between his organization and the National Alliance, another group that promotes separating whites from people of other races. Director Bill Schell said library policy allows any group, regardless of viewpoint, to use its meeting rooms. The only way he would change his mind, Schell said, is if he concludes security issues outweighed Hale's First Amendment rights. Quote, "We have ideas from Gandhi to Hitler here. That's what libraries are about," unquote, Schell said. He said he would call the state attorney general to find out if Hale presents a threat. Hale, who has a law degree, has spoken at other libraries across the country and has won in court when officials tried to turn him away. Let me stop there. That's very important right there. I have won in court. In Schaumburg, Illinois, they tried to stop me from meeting at the Schaumburg Township District Library, and I promptly sued, and they promptly changed their mind. That legal victory is already reaping big dividends for us. The libraries across the country are on notice. They know darn well that if they try to curtail my First Amendment rights, the First Amendment rights of our church, lawsuits will follow. That is very good. It's very good to have a little power. It's necessary for white racial loyalists to have power. We can't just be kicked around all the time, and that's why, once again, I urge those of you who are so inclined to go to law school, get that law degree, get that law license, and fight the fight in the court of law as well. The court of law is an extremely important place. We cannot abandon it to our enemies, and will not. Okay, to resume the article. In March, a library in Illinois barred Hale, citing fears that his message could lead to violence. But the library rescinded its decision after a federal court decided to hear Hale's case. The library closed early and allowed Hale to speak in a meeting room after hours, according to the Chicago Tribune. State and York County tax dollars pay for about 50% of Martin Library's $2.3 million budget, according to Schell. About 50% comes from other sources, such as gifts and private grants. When the library has censored groups, it has been because of obscenity issues, Schell said. Years ago, a gay pride group, Delta Lambda Phi, had asked to show a video in a meeting. Schell said he viewed it beforehand and decided it was inappropriate. He said barring that video would have been no different if he had barred a video from a porn shop. After meeting with Schell, Cooper said that even if the library didn't want the meeting to be held there, there isn't anything they can do to stop it from happening. Now, here's the great quote here. This is a quote from this NAACP, York, City of York, head. Quote, "Schell would have had a hard time with this guy," unquote, Cooper said. Quote, "The guy's a lawyer. He got a law degree specifically to promote and challenge the court to spread the philosophies of his organization," unquote. Well, he's got it pretty much right. Yes, that's a big part of why I went to law school. And isn't it wonderful? Oh, goodness. You know, I can say, quite frankly so, as I always am, as you know I am, that, yes, I was quite happy to read that. I just said aloud, I said, that's my type of quote. That's my type of article right there. Yes. Yes, I went to law school. I got a law degree to spread the philosophy of the World Church of the Creator. I love it. get back to the article here. That doesn't mean Cooper is any less upset that the meeting is going to happen. Let me stop there. Isn't it always nice that a nigger who had nothing to do, his race had absolutely nothing to do with the founding of this country, had nothing to do with the carving or the creation of the Declaration of Independence, nothing to do with the Constitution of the United States. Isn't it always nice when the niggers say, well, we don't like the fact that First Amendment activities are extended to white racists? Well, if it wasn't for white racists, he wouldn't have any rights. If it wasn't for white people who formed this country, who founded all the founding documents that supposedly made this country a great country, this nigger would be in Africa walking around, maybe living in a mud hut, maybe or even probably being dead by now because of his ancestors would have eaten each other or killed each other because of a lack of civilized impulse, a lack of intelligence, a lack of sophistication. So, in other words, and I didn't put all that very well, in other words, if it weren't for white people, this nigger would have no comprehension, no understanding at all of liberty, no understanding of rights. He is using the rights that white people gave him as a battering ram to try to eliminate the existence of the white race itself. This isn't anything new, however. You have people, for example, I was on a radio show recently in which I was being interviewed from by Radio Europe, in which the guy said, well, you should feel pretty grateful for being allowed to spread your message. And I said, I'm not grateful for that. Why should I be grateful to some Jew who wants to ask me questions on a radio that white people created, when, of course, it's white people, it's really the Jews who should be grateful to white people for even being allowed to say anything at all in our society. It's the same thing with the niggers. The niggers should be thanking white people for being so nice to take them out of the mud huts, for taking them out of the hellhole of Africa, instead of demanding that we do this and do that, and then try to put us in jail or muzzle us if we don't. Amazing. To get back to the article here, quote, he and Shell plan to meet again soon to discuss the purpose of the library and the diversity of its events, Cooper said, adding that he questioned the ethics of the library a little over a year ago over a book about the Confederate flag that had been placed on special display for about a month. Basically, what that means is that the NACP is trying to get concessions out of the library and make the library more niggerified in order to withdraw any type of opposition towards it over this speech. It's a little subliminal, that paragraph, but that's what it basically means. It's like saying, well, okay, yeah, we won't complain about the library meeting of Reverend Matt Hale and the World Church of the Creator, but you better think twice next time about putting a Confederate flag up in a display. You might want to think about having more black-type books on the shelves, more Ebonics, perhaps, what have you. So that's pretty clear there. Getting back to the article here. After finding out that Hale and the National Alliance are coming to York, Kathy Ashe, director of York City's Human Relations Commission, was up most of the night Wednesday trying to contact people to tell them of the event. Okay, so this person couldn't wait until daylight hours to call people on the phone. So in other words, she was calling people at 3 a.m. in the morning saying, oh my goodness, the World Church of the Creator is coming to York. It's almost comical. Does this person have a brain? I don't know. It is true that people like Kathy Ashe is an excellent example of how we, you know, expressly disclaim the equality of everybody within a race as well. Anyway, the article says, also, even though she does not like the topic of the meeting, she says, she supports the library's decision to be fair to the World Church of the Creator, since the commission works to monitor discrimination of any kind that might happen to people who live or work in York. Right. Yeah, that you can really believe that. It says here, despite the fact that Hale believes a full house will be attending the meeting, Ashe said these types of events aren't usually well attended by new recruits, but can be an attraction for protesters. Well, Wallingford, when we had a meeting in Wallingford, Connecticut, we had a full house in the public library there. We had over 70 white racial loyalists, many of them members of the World Church of the Creator. So I do anticipate a great turnout in Pennsylvania. In fact, once again, I'm counting on you to make sure that that happens. If you live in Pennsylvania, there's just no reason not to be there. I don't, you know, unless you're going to be under surgery or something, January 12th, York is the place to be. And if you're in an adjoining state, we need you. We need to have a large turnout for a lot of reasons, but one reason is that the media, the cameras are going to be on us. We're going to be in the spotlight, and we don't want to have a situation where we have six people there. We want to have 60. We want to have 100 would be nice. 100 solid white racial loyalists who believe in their people, who are ready to stand up for their people just as much, and in fact more, than the mud races are willing to stand up for theirs. You know, it's something that I've mused about many a time. We have the situation in which white people are currently spending more time trying to save the seals and the dolphins and the whales than their own white race. And that's really sickening. It's just pathetic that white people have been so confused. They are so confused in this society that more white people are hugging trees right now or trying to save whales than are trying to save the white race. That needs to end. That type of insanity must go. Getting back to the article here. She said she hopes everyone will stay clear of Martin Lieber on January 12th. It's always funny when they say things like that, because that absolutely entices people to come. When a city official or any kind of public persona is telling people not to attend a meeting, that's when people want to come. It's like having a CD and having a label on it saying offensive lyrics, danger, warning, blah, blah, blah. Kids see that and they want to buy it because of that. It's like saying, don't put your hand in the cookie jar. The kid's going to want to put his hand in the cookie jar. So I always find it interesting and amusing when they tell people not to attend. And I'm always glad when they do tell people not to attend, because I know we're going to have a pretty good turnout. Captain Bill Van Green from the York Police Department said protesters are usually the problem for police at events like the scheduled January meeting. Well, that's certainly the case. It's always the protesters that are the problem. It's not us who are the problem. York Police plans to have proper security in place during the meeting. I'm sure they will. We're always interested in peace, Van Green said. If people want to protest, it has to be done in a peaceful manner for it to be effective. Oh, absolutely. Ash believes that the January 12th meeting could bring unity to York residents and might even ease some of the existing tensions that had developed out of the York County District Attorney's Office reopening the investigation into the 1969 race riot murders. How ridiculous can you get? Yeah, so on the one hand, she's urging us not to attend. She's urging me to change my mind about speaking in York. But then on the other hand, she's saying, oh gosh, this is, you know, it might actually be good. It could bring unity to York residents. Obviously a contradiction. Flyers are going to be passed out to all York City school students, Ash said, urging them to stay clear of the meeting. Well, there we go again. Tell a student, tell a kid he can't show up or he shouldn't show up at a meeting and he's going to want to show up. So, but of course, it does, I guess, behoove us saying that is unfortunate. As always, they utilize this as an excuse to further brainwash the children. The children are being brainwashed, brain polluted at an unprecedented rate. They are being turned into sheep. They are being turned into, in fact, even worse than sheep, enemies of the white race. And so, once again, I urge all of you who are in high schools, and I know that high school students listen to this program, I urge all of you who are near high schools or know people in high school or etc. to spread the literature in the high schools. We have to get the truth back in the schools. We have to teach the law, the immutable law of race, that race matters and that integration is poison and must be ended. Quote, they're the most important group we need to watch out for, she said. We have to make sure they do not attend, referring to those students again. So in any case, that's pretty much the article. It's heating up. It's heating up in York, Pennsylvania. We need you to be there. I've said that a few times, but it's always good to say it again. Now, I'd like to talk about the public meeting in general. Public meetings are an important part of our cause. Public meetings are one of the aspects, one of the many things that makes our Royal Church of the Creator the best. Certainly, there are other aspects as well. The fact that we have a religion for white people for the first time in 6,000 years. Certainly the fact that we are the most active organization in America, if not the world. But also the fact, specifically, that we go straight to the people. We have mass meetings. We have public meetings. We don't just, you know, sit behind a computer screen, though of course we promote the church on the internet, and we're very happy to. At the same time, we also, in conjunction with our internet campaign, which has been marvelously successful, we have to also look people in the eye and shake their hand and tell them why we believe as we do. The public meetings are an excellent opportunity for that. People come, average people come, they listen to what I have to say, and they walk out of that room agreeing with what I have to say. That's why this Kathy Ash urges people not to attend. She couldn't care less about the propensity or the possibility of violence. That's not her interest here. Her interest is very clear. She doesn't want people to walk away believing in the message of the World Church of the Creator. Well, it's going to happen. There will be people who will. There will be more members of our church as a result. We will unify the people of York, the white people of York, who have had to live in an integrated town, a town that has seen racial problems numerous times in its history, a town in which the mayor is being unfairly targeted by the state's attorney's office, who brings up this case 32 years ago that obviously, justice delayed. As the old saying goes, justice delayed is justice denied. You can't have a guy, in charge him 32 years after the act with something and expect that to be just. That's not just. Witnesses die, witnesses' memories become hazy, and everything else. And then they parade these witnesses, the witnesses for their side into the courtroom, and the poor hapless guy is sitting there and trying to defend himself from allegations that if they had been brought in 1969 would have fallen on their face. The same thing happened with Byron De La Beckwith. As you might recall, he was put on trial for shooting Medgar Evers, and put on trial, several times. I mean, he was, the jury basically hung a couple times, I know, and they just kept putting him on trial. And finally, they get a conviction with with the jury that's been completely propagandized, and I don't even know what the racial composition of the jury was, but they have a racially, or not racially, but politically or ideologically propagandized jury, and they convict him of a crime that had happened 30 years earlier. It's sick. It's a travesty. It's a violation of the Constitution, for one thing, to put people on trial repeatedly for the same charge or the same act. Now, here's an interesting thing, just another little piece of law for you. This is how they get around it. They say, well, we're not putting you on trial for the same exact charge, and plus, we're putting you on trial in the federal court rather than the state court. You were tried in state court. We're trying you in federal court. And so those are two different sovereigns. And so therefore, no, you weren't put in jeopardy of life and limb twice. You did not suffer double jeopardy because they are two different sovereigns, and it's not exactly the same charge. What Jewish nonsense. What Jewish garbage. How sick can you get that the Constitution has been so overthrown, so ripped and urinated on practically by the enemies of the white race that they offer such nonsense and actually, stand by it with an open, with a straight face? I remember being in law school and hearing this and, raising my hand and saying, wait a minute, the guy's still on trial. That's the whole purpose. It's not trying to, it's like saying, well, okay, we're going to form a city court now, and so we can try you at the city level. If we don't get a conviction, we'll go to the state level. If we don't get a conviction there, we'll put you on trial in a county court, and then a state court, and then, maybe the federal government can have you, and if that doesn't work, we'll send you to the United Nations, and you can stand trial there. It's pathetic. It's complete abrogation of what was intended by that constitutional amendment. We're going to take a brief pause, and we will be back very soon. Okay, we are back with In Class and We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale. We were talking about double jeopardy and how, of course, it just went out the window with Byron Daly Beckwith, as well as the mayor of York at this time. So, a lot of reasons for our public meeting in York. But, you know, sometimes the media, they ask me, they say, well, why York? And I can give those reasons. I can talk about the mayor getting the shaft. I can talk about the fact that we have members in that area. I can talk about the fact that there have been many literature distributions in York by members of the World Church of the Creator, as well as the National Alliance, which I might add and mention, as the article stated, we have invited that organization in particular to attend. The National Alliance was very kind enough to attend our Wallingford, Connecticut meetings, and we appreciated that, and so we have welcomed them once again. And, in fact, I did welcome the National Alliance to have a speaker at this event. We have 2 hours at the public library, and I would be happy to have a representative from the National Alliance speak. And then I will follow that up, and we will have a great meeting. So, in any case, I could mention that, and I do mention that to the media. I say, well, here are all the reasons. Here are a number of reasons. But the most important reason, the most obvious reason, is that we should speak everywhere. Everywhere there are white people, we should speak. We have to get away from this notion that a speech is something you have once a year. Go to your local public library once every couple years and give a speech. That is not what we must do. What we must do instead is speak loudly and speak often. Speak as often as we can get the people together. And that's where you come in once again, my brother or sister. We need you to commit yourself to being there. It is difficult. Sometimes we have meetings in which I'm wondering if we're going to have much of an attendance at all. And I don't have to wonder. I should have the people ready to be there. Let me do my job, and I need you to do yours. That's the bottom line. The man in Germany, who many of us respect and admire, he wasn't just sitting at a desk. He wasn't just talking to his friends. He was talking to the masses. We can only build a mass movement by talking to the masses, by preaching, by having countless speeches. I would speak everywhere every day if I had the people to speak to. If I could have the people organize these events, I would fly here, there, and everywhere to speak. That's what I love to do. That is my calling. That is my main calling in this struggle. That has been my calling since I discovered that I could speak. And, of course, it took me a long time. A lot of people think that, or might have the idea that I was a natural. I was not a natural. I was a person who, when I gave my first speeches when I was 18, I was stumbling around and I had a nervous problem. I was nervous being in front of a camera. I was nervous having a microphone in front of me. But I got better and I practiced. I didn't even practice very much. I just practiced through action. It is better to make a mistake and rectify it than be afraid of doing something for fear of making a mistake. Always remember that. Always remember it is okay to make a mistake now and then. It's okay to do something or say something that's wrong or proves to be wrong or fallacious or what have you, as long as you learn from it and you go forward with that knowledge. There are many times, for example, I will listen to various interviews that I provide to the press. I will watch it. Not because I like to see myself on TV so much, but because I learn from how things happen and how things transpire. It's like being an attorney. An attorney isn't worth his salt if he doesn't learn from his opposing side. You learn something every case that you deal with. And even though I don't have my law license yet, as you well know, at the same time, I have gleaned a lot of law the past few years. I have been, of course, sued. Our church has been sued. I have help to thwart these lawsuits, and I have learned a lot, and I've written up paperwork at the direction of attorneys in the case, a licensed attorney, so that's completely legal and everything. And I've learned more about the law through being in the sparring contest with our enemies. They just do us a favor. Once again, they strengthen us. It's like somebody working out with weights. Yeah, you can go ahead and lift 5 pounds, and you can lift it maybe 100 times or 200 times, and then smile at yourself in the mirror. But you won't get anywhere if you don't increase the resistance. The more resistance, the more strength. And that's one of the themes of the World Church of the Creator. We believe as creators in making ourselves stronger. We believe very strongly in what Friedrich Nietzsche had to say on the subject. And I'll say it in German, and I'll say it in English. Was mich nicht umbringt, macht mich stärker. What does not break me makes me stronger. That's very much the case, and we learn from that. Creators need to be enthusiastic, and many of them are. Of course, we need all of them to be very enthusiastic. They need to be recruiting members in their local communities. That's something that I think has been missed by some in our movement, the idea that we need to recruit people right at home. If you are a new member of the World Church of the Creator, or if you are contemplating becoming a member of the World Church of the Creator, your first order of business, of course, join the church if you haven't already. And then once you have joined, recruit your neighbor, recruit your friends, have them sign the dotted line. Form your own chapter in your own community. Have your own local services. Become a minister in the church, and then you can perform services as a minister. Have meetings of your own, public meetings of your own. Get a fax machine. Start sending out press releases to the press. Start organizing people. Put on our public access television show. There are innumerable things you can do to spread creativity, our white racial religion, throughout your area. We're just about out of time on this week's episode of In Clausen We Trust. It was great being with you once again. Our address, once again, is P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611. Be sure to contact us today if you haven't written us before. Our email address, or my email address specifically, is pmhale1@aol.com. You can write me. I can't guarantee a personal response to every email, but you will hear from somebody. And we need, you know, that brings up another point, and I'll say it very quickly. We need, of course, initiative. We need you to have the initiative. Don't just be a listener. Be a doer. Be an activist. Every one of you can do what I do. Just get yourself out there and do it. And let me just put it this way, not to brag, but if every creator were doing what I do, I think that we would win very quickly, you know, fairly quickly. If we had 500 creators that were having radio shows, having speeches, if they were recruiting people, if we were, let's just put it this way, maybe not doing what I do, but acting at the same intensity of activism as I act, I know that we would win in a very short period of time. I hope I'm not being arrogant by saying that, but remember, I don't have to be just the one guy out there. You can join with me in this endeavor. You can do your part, and we can and we must, we will win this racial holy war. I look forward to speaking with you next week. We will continue to fight the fight for what is white, the fight for the truth. We will fight for our white race come hell or high water. We will drive the mud races from our shores, and we will regain complete and absolute control of our own destiny. May we together win this racial holy war. Rahoa!